This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 516, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank, an old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang to me, the red old Mountain Dew. I turned my face away and dreamed about you.
Got on a lucky one, came in 18 to 1. I got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas, I love you, baby. I can see a better time when all our dreams come true.
They've got cars big as bars, they've got rivers of gold, and the wind goes right through you, it's no place for the old. When you first took my hand on a cold Christmas Eve, you promised me Broadway was waiting for me. You were handsome,
you were pretty, the queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they howled out for more.
Sinatra was swinging, the drunks were all singing.
We kissed on a corner and danced through the night.
The boys of the NYPD choir were singing Galway Bay, and the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 516, my old area code. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Sup?
We are from iFanboy, where we are living teetering on the edge of death's door.
Oh, God. Make it stop.
But despite that, we are still reading the week's comics that come out every week, and then one of us picks their favorite book and comes here and calls that the pick of the week, and we talk about that, as well as the other books that came out, our various medications.
Because we can talk about that if you want.
We're old and talk about our medication and diagnoses.
I got a pill set for like every point of the day I take a pill. This is like what it's like to be elderly.
Welcome to the elite AARP, Connor.
I'm so excited.
No offense to any of our senior citizen listeners out there. We love you. Okay, so this is a review show, and we're going to talk about what happens in the books. So if you haven't read your comics yet, we're going to spoil some of the plots. So you might want to press pause and come back and listen later on after you read your books. If you've read your books, Connor's going to tell us about his last pick of the week for 2015.
Guys, this was a hard week.
Is this the last? This is the last show of the year, right?
Yes, the last pick show of the year.
All right, last pick of the week. Why was it a hard week?
Well, I ended up in the emergency room.
we're just talking in general.
In a foreign,
I totally forgot about that part.
In another state, got diagnosed with pneumonia, which is great. Spent a lot of time in doctors and pharmacies, and coughing and not sleeping. So when I read my comics on Wednesday,
Wait a minute. So what you're saying, you're in the perfect position to read a Grant Morrison comic book.
Yes. Yes. And I was actually, I needed that escape. I was looking, really looking forward to those comics because I just needed to think about something other than all the shit coughing up out of my lungs. And so the pick of the week ended up being Klaus number 2, which is from Boom Studios. Grant Morrison is the writer, we just said, and Dan Moore is the artist. And we talked about Klaus 1 last, I don't think it was a month ago, because it feels like, or maybe it was. My sense of time is all gone now. It's all just coughing in the couch at this point. Klaus is Grant Morrison's reimagined origin for Santa Claus. And Ron and I discussed how we weren't sure how we felt about this as people who really love Christmas. We didn't necessarily need...
I'm going to say love Santa.
Love Santa too, man. Who doesn't love fucking Santa?
Jeez. Whoa. Wait a minute. I never signed up to fuck Santa.
No.
Wait a minute.
We love Christmas and coming with that, love Santa. You love Santa Claus.
Yes.
And we didn't need a sort of modern, you know, the modern day version of a origin retelling is you take something, usually kids' property, and you make it all grim and gritty and full of blood. And we didn't necessarily need that on this Christmas season when we were all dying, our last Christmas, as it were.
Yeah.
But
I gave you my heart.
Was that grim?
The very next day, you gave an infection and took it away.
Was that a grim thing? But we actually really liked the first issue. It wasn't so grim and gritty. It actually was kind of fun and sweet. I mean, you know, there was some action and stuff, but it wasn't actually that bad. And Klaus number 2, I ended up really just liking for that very reason. Because, all right, so in the first issue, we're gonna call him Santa Claus. We made this decision last month. We're going to do it again. Santa Claus arrives at this town that no longer celebrates Christmas. The kids are no longer allowed to have toys. And there's no joy in
Mudville. Sorry, I couldn't help it.
That's okay. Same joke as last one. We'll keep rolling with everything. It's the last show. Gives a fuck. I'm not gonna make it to the next show, so who cares? the town is not allowed to experience joy really anymore, and it's all because the tyrant and king and his son wants all the toys, wants no other kids to have fun if he's not having fun, and so he went off in the woods and became imbued with some power, and while he was quite frankly tripping on whatever power that was, he built a lot of toys. And so in this issue, he returns to the town with his toys to give out to the kids, but he has to sneak into the town, and he has to beat up some guards. He's got to be basically like a ninja. He's got to do this awesome thing with a snowball that turns into a big giant snowball that lands on these guards' heads. And then the kids of the town wake up to find toys at their doorstep, and they're all excited, and the parents are freaking out because they know they're not allowed to have toys. And then the kid in the tower, the castle, sees they've got toys, and it's all a big problem. Now Santa Claus is in town. And I really, this had a nice, sweet side, but also being really fun and sort of action-adventure. It feels very much like an all-ages story. Ron, am I crazy? Am I on a lot of pills?
No, I think you're spot on. I think that,
It doesn't seem like it's going to be. Like, it doesn't, this is going to be all violent. Then you're like, oh, I guess it wasn't. It's fine.
Mm. I mean, he beats up people and stuff, but, you know.
Yeah, but he doesn't kill anybody, and it looks like he's about to.
Yeah, and it's in this kind of Game of Thronesy and kind of, you know, medieval interest in terms of stories and things like that. It fits right in with that. I mean, you got a castle, you got castle guards, you got walls, you got, you know, all this sort of stuff. And while there's violence, it's not hyper violent. It's not over violent.
I don't even think there's any blood, is there?
No, I don't think so either. And I think that and I found myself really like getting into it with this issue and like rooting for him. And the thing is, you know, it's kind of as ridiculous as it might be to the idea of, you know, a young Santa Claus who's, you know, still has a dark, you know, dark hair, to, you know, whether it's black or whatever beard, you know, like he doesn't have the white hair and the white beard we know of yet, you know, but like to see him with the red kind of cape and the red kind of hat and you know, climbing the wall with a bag full of toys. And, you know, like it kind of like I got into it. I was like, all right, yeah, I see. I get it now. Like the first issue, I didn't quite get it. And the first issue had that weird Grant Morrison, Peter Milligan, peyote trip moment, you know. But this issue didn't have any of that. This issue was just pure Batman-esque stealth action.
And he dispatched a guard with a snowman. So
yeah, which was great. A big guard too, like their biggest dude.
And even
Ivan.
And like Batman, he or I guess more like Zorro, he defaces the signs in town with a sigil for joy. So really, this was the book that made me the happiest. There was a lot of, actually read a lot of really great books this week, but this was the one that put a smile on my face at a time I really needed one. And so that is why Klaus number two is the pick of the week. Now, let's talk quickly about its release schedule.
Okay.
Because this is a 6-issue miniseries.
Right. So I it's gonna end in the summer.
Right. Don't you think they should have started it earlier and had it sort of end around Christmas instead of it kicking off in November and ending in, what, April or May?
This isn't the first time Grant has done a Christmas-themed story that did not end by Christmas. And so this is familiar territory. I'm sure the road of comic book publishing is paved with good intentions. So.
It's just bizarre.
Yeah.
Or don't do 6 issues. Do 3.
Yeah.
And have it in January.
Yeah. Well, the idea is to get it out, and then next Christmas this will be a great trade paperback or great hardcover or something like that to do. So.
Look at him thinking like an industry professional still.
No. Well,
gotta go a long game.
That's the thing. Yeah, you know, the issues are transient. It's the book publishing that's gonna have it's a marathon, not a sprint.
So, I like the Dan Moore art a lot too.
Yeah, no, it is growing on me. I know we were talking about that last week, and we were talking about the talent vacuum when it comes to artists, mm-hmm. and you know, we're seeing a lot of names that are newer names that people don't kind of recognize, and it's great to see people kind of getting chances to, you know, kind of spread their wings and show what they can do, and it is really growing on me. I think after this series, I'm going to keep an eye on what this guy does next.
Yep. He's right for it.
Yes,
he's one of those things. It seems like an odd pairing for Grant Morrison specifically, but not wrong for the story, if that makes sense.
Right. Right. So what I thought would be a contender for pick of the week would Superman American Alien number 2. I really loved the first issue in which this is sort of built as an anthology series of Superman stories. It's the moments in his life that were important. And it's written by, what's his name?
Max Landis.
Max Landis. And the first issue was drawn by Nick Jagoda, and there's going to be a different artist with every issue. And this one was Tommy Lee Edwards, who is fantastic. What?
So for some reason, I am just completely blind to this title. Like I missed it when it came out, the first issue, and I missed it this week.
It's now funny because the covers are very, like, they stand out a great deal.
Yes.
Yeah, and for some reason, I just completely went, you know, I went to the comic book shop, I looked online, like, I just completely didn't even see it, and now I'm bummed because I really liked the, whatchamacallit, the first issue. I thought the first issue was fantastic.
We are
awesome
podcasting.
All right, so Tommy Lee Edwards is the artist, and he's fantastic, and he's an artist I don't see enough of. And actually, he'd be perfect to do every issue of this series. He really gets that old Smallville feeling down, and his work is so lived in. You know, there's such an atmosphere to the panels and the pages that you really get the setting really well. You really get a sense of Smallville, the downtown area, the farms, and everything. Now, the problem here is that this issue was actually really hyper-violent, and I didn't end up liking it very much. It started off very sweetly with a young teenage Clark and Lana in a diner as Lana tutors him in French, and there's a little bit of flirting going on. It was all really great. But then a bunch of ruffians come to town, rob a convenience store, kill the clerk, kill the people that are in the store. And what was weird about this issue was, number one, everybody seems to know that Clark has powers in town, which wasn't established in the first issue. But now the kids he's hanging around with know, the sheriff knows. And I thought that's a weird – A, that's a weird choice. B, that's a weird choice to make with no explanation whatsoever.
Well, that's kind of similar to the new paradigm in the new world of you know, like Arrow and the Flash on TV, where there's like 90 people who know who they are and what they're, you know, and what they're doing, right?
Right, and they should be phasing out secret identities, which I think is a huge mistake.
That's a question of whether or not secret identities work in this modern storytelling world anymore.
I'm trying to get a handle on what this is. This isn't supposed to fit in with the Superman as we know, is it? It's more like an Elseworlds kind of thing.
It's just a Max Landis book. It's not.
Yeah,
really.
And that's totally fine. But so it sounds like they're just saying, how would you tell your story of Clark growing up? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's reasonable to say that, you know, through this view of Superman's world, this is a small town. You know, it's hard to keep secrets in small towns. I don't know if they have social media yet in the small town or what, you know, but. You know, people talk. Things get around. It's hard to keep secrets. You know, so-and-so's dating somebody. You know.
Well, this is a theme that's going to come up as we talk about Huck later on in the show.
Yeah, it does feel very much like Huck in that They all know. But it just seems an odd change to make with no explanation, which I guess is...
I mean, but this is the explanation. They're just saying this is the reality of this one.
Right.
And, you know, Superman cutting off dude's arms, that's an odd change to me. That was a much bigger change to me.
Well, yeah, that was the second part, was when he actually ends up confronting the thugs, he I-beams, heat visions off one of the Doom's arms. Now, he doesn't necessarily do it on purpose.
You know, if you're going with the metaphor for puberty, you know, he's in control. He's bald. He's not in control. He's in a ball of hormones, which, by the way, if you're not human, I don't know that that actually would sync up exactly with teenage years. But whatever, you know, it all works as a version of Superman's story. I mean, it's almost more likely that that would happen than not.
It's interesting that he can get hurt, but not badly hurt, like he's bleeding. And they, and it looks like the bullets pierce his skin, but not his bones. It's like kind of like Wolverine. I don't know. It has taken a hard right turn quicker than I thought it would.
But you really like the first issue, so is it turning you off? Or?
Yeah, I'm going to read the next one. According to the little DCPR interview in the back of the book, or the ones that have been in the back of the book, each issue has a distinct tone to it. So maybe this is the only one. But then again, I see from the little one-page story that Doc Shaner drew in the back that Doomsday is coming. So, listen, I love Superman, and I'm desperate to get some Superman stories that I can enjoy, so I'm going to give this one at least one more issue.
Those Doc Shaner pages look great.
Yes.
Is he doing the next issue? Or?
I assume that's what that means.
He's great. That's great. But I like Tommy Lee Edwards, too. I don't know.
Tommy Lee Edwards is wonderful.
Yeah, it's one artist per issue. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah, and I feel like Max Landis is a writer who is not I don't want to say desperately, but he's trying to make a name for himself in his approach in terms of what he does. Right.
He has a very distinct viewpoint, which is good.
Right. Exactly. And it comes across in the movies he writes, as well as now the comics and that sort of thing. So I mean, I would expect something that he writes to take a well-known character like Superman to be challenging towards what you know and what you think of the character.
Well, the thing is, I feel like people expect it to not like this, and I'm reading it. I'm like, well, it's interesting at least,
right?
The very least, and I don't think it's poorly done. It's a take, you know.
Yeah.
And see, Clark has some very sensuous lips.
Whoa, hey, well then.
So
right. I don't associate Tommy Lee Edwards with sensuous lips.
But look at that second page. Look at those lips. No wonder Lana's all about inviting him over when her parents are gone.
Hey, just a small town boy.
That's right.
So did either of you guys read Squadron Supreme number one?
No.
I've never read a Squadron Supreme book in my life.
I would advise you to go take a look at this.
You would or you wouldn't?
I would.
For ironic reasons, because that's the tone of voice you've got going right now.
Let's just say this was not this is this okay. So this brought up a lot of questions that I didn't. It was not what I expected. So it is James Robinson and Leonard Kirk working together. Uh-huh. And we've seen we've enjoyed Leonard Kirk's work when he was doing Captain Britain, and you know he's a solid guy. And of course, a long storied history of comics by James Robinson. So this is post Secret Wars, right? And
wait, weren't they a team on a book? They were a team on.
What book?
The Invaders book he did, weren't they?
You might be correct. Yeah.
Not important. Continue.
Yeah, but he is. It's funny because I was just typing into Google. I typed James Robinson Leonard, and it autofilled Cohen. And then I thought, oh wow, what would a James Robinson Leonard Cohen collaboration be like?
But also, why is that autofilling like that?
I know it's from. Oh, they worked on Fantastic Four together.
Fantastic Four. That was what it was.
Fantastic Four that nobody read.
I read it.
Did you like it?
Yes.
Okay, so the squad.
Your yes sounded just like his. You should read.
No,
this.
I did. Also, I realized I talked about it when you were not around anymore. Ron, you had left us, and that's when I talked about it.
I left you. So this is a post Secret Wars story, right? So it's actually on the opening page on the recap page, it does say 8 months later. So there's that 8 months after Secret Wars ended, kind of time jump, and. What Robinson has done in terms of assembling this team is that he's taken – so the Squadron Supreme has been introduced through various different Earths in the multiverse, right? There was the Squadron Supreme from the 60s. That was the original one. Then there was the Supreme Power one that JMS did that was in the Max line that got folded in, right? I believe there was also one in the Ultimate Universe.
Isn't this the version of the Justice League?
Well, yeah. Originally, Squadron Supreme was an amalgam to the Justice League, was a way to fold in the Justice League to fight the Avengers without actually doing a crossover at DC. So you had a Hyperion was like Superman and Nighthawk was like Batman. And, you know, you had all those kind of those templates,
right,
you know.
Right, right.
But over the years, the characters have evolved and some creators have told some very, very interesting stories with these characters. And what James Robinson now is doing is that he's taking these different versions of the characters, including like the Hyperion that was in Hickman's Avengers run. Remember, mm-hmm. there was a Hyperion on that team?
No, I didn't read it.
Well, there was. The Nighthawk from JMS's Supreme Power run, and just basically taking a different version of the character from the different multiverse and putting them together as a team.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's an interesting premise. And then for some reason, and I don't quite understand why, they're all very angry at Namor. They're very angry at Namor. And so they come together as a team, and the motivation is to attack Atlantis and to give Namor back what he got. Because I guess I do know why. It's because Namor was part of the people who were destroying the planets before Secret Wars. And they blame Namor for destroying their worlds, basically. Which is weird because do people remember what happened before Secret Wars or not? Like, I don't know the rules of the universe at this point. But so basically, you've got this badass kind of Justice League esque team who's bringing the fight to Namor, and they go to Atlantis and they fight. And at one point, Hyperion dives underwater and picks the city of Atlantis up and throws it, thus destroying Atlantis. Which then, of course, upsets Namor very much because they've destroyed his city. And they make the point, yeah, but you destroyed our planets. And then they chop Namor's head off.
I feel like this should be bigger news.
Right, exactly. Which leads to my question that, is this in continuity?
Did it happen? Is this all a dream?
No. I mean, it happened. I know it happened. I read it. But, like, and then at the end of the issue, Steve Rogers is the Uncanny Avengers kind of show up, which makes me think that this is happening in the real world. And so, like, did Namor just die in this issue? Did they just kill off Namor?
I'm going to go with no.
Yeah.
Just because he's Namor.
Can they grow a head back?
Maybe. I don't know.
He's fish. He's fish, man. Maybe that's the thing they do.
He's got
wings on his ankles. Who knows?
It was amusing. It was interesting, but you know, I just feel as if, you know, and I'm looking on the news and you know, and I'm not seeing anybody talk about Namor dying.
Nothing on ABC News. Nothing on NBC. Yeah. CBS. Nothing.
Yeah, nothing. Nothing on CBS. Yeah, but so I guess Namor's dead. So there you go.
Forever.
Forever, because forever. You know how that works.
on another
Connor,
week,
can we get the fuck count for the second issue of The Goddamned?
Well, on another week, The Goddamned probably would have been the pick, but it was just too bleak for my mood this week. But Jesus Christ, wow. I don't even mean to pun him that way, but Jason Aaron's got some issues. He has a lot of darkness in him, and.
Well, you've looked into those eyes.
I've looked into his eyes, beard. The cold, dead or eyes.
Into that beard.
And I do really like this book. I wasn't sure what to make of the first issue, but now that I know what I'm in for, you know, it looks great. The Aram Guerra art is just the wonderful stuff we come to expect from him that we saw.
Guerra sort of is the perfect cipher for those dark feelings that reside within him, clearly.
But I'm surprised that – has no one told Fox News about this book? Has no one clued in anyone? Because the stuff that gets complained about is a lot less tame than this. And the little dog pack of feral boys.
And that was disturbing.
And the cannibals right before that.
If you're in Old Testament, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's anything after that that you can get into trouble with. This stuff is all – it's pretty much what happened.
I think he's having a lot of fun coming up with groups of people names, or the fuck hunters, the skin cutters, the shit witches, the bone boys.
it really is creative.
I hope he has a whiteboard somewhere with just a list.
It's the Gangs of New Babylon. It's a different kind of thing.
The skin
cutters. I bet they just flow out of him like water from a tap. That's my guess.
The shit witches.
Shit witch.
What did you guys think of this issue?
I still don't know what to make of the series, but I'm enjoying it.
I'm kind of with Ron.
Yeah.
Like, I'm absolutely sure about I'm going to be happy with where it goes, but I don't quite know what it is yet. I mean, there was the bit at the end is actually a fairly significant turn because the character, all of the characters seem to be just monstrous and cynical and mean. And there's a turn where the character at the end sort of doesn't want to, but decides to go do the right thing.
You mean Kane?
Yeah. I don't know any characters' names.
This is Kane.
Yeah, like I don't know who I'm supposed to be rooting for.
It's Kane.
Kane. As of and Abel.
Son of Adam and Eve, first murderer.
First murderer, yeah.
Okay.
Killed his brother.
We didn't really cover the Old Testament when I went to religion.
I don't even know anything about the Bible, but I know that.
Yeah. I don't know that.
I literally only know this stuff because of comics, mostly Vertigo.
Interesting.
True. That is true. That's how I know it.
Totally. I mean, like The Sandman, I learned a ton of it through there. Lucifer, bunch of books like that.
Hey, Josh, they're rebooting Lucifer. You excited?
I read it. I actually forgot to add it to the list. I'll mention it at the end if we're.
Yeah.
So
just in time for the TV show.
How many hours would we last in this world?
What, like minutes? You mean?
Well, like, I wouldn't have survived my appendectomy, so.
Listen, when it rains and it gets muddy out, I barely want to go outside today.
Let's just, there's two of us surviving on antibiotics now, so let's go ahead and make sure we take those out of the equation.
And then on the one that's not on antibiotics, I'm probably the weakest of the three, so it's.
Well, I'm just saying, the antibiotics are going to kill us in an hour, but the feral dog boys might.
Yeah.
This is a really disturbing book in a good way for me.
I'm a pretty boy. I think they put me in one of the camps.
You'd be a fuck hunter. What would you be?
I'd be fuck hunted.
You'd be fuck hunted. It's good. It's very very good. It's just very disturbing, and it just wasn't what I needed on that day.
I really don't think that it's kicked in yet. And I go back to remembering. It's really easy to compare it to this. But I remember with Scalp, like, it hadn't kicked in yet. For a while, like, it took a little while till we knew what we were doing and what the stakes were, and I, you know, we haven't really met everybody yet, and I think that we don't know what this is yet, but I have 100% confidence that it's going to be fine.
And part of it also is that, like, it's beautiful to look at. I mean, Gera is amazing. Yeah, I mean, like, knowing what Gera's work on Scalped looked like compared to this, they're completely different.
Yeah,
in a great way, you know what I mean? Like, this is really, you know, like, this. I was trying to think of who this reminded me of. The art reminded me of while I was reading this issue, and I couldn't put my finger on it. But I just spent minutes looking at the pages, you know, and just kind of soaking it all in. So
it's very good.
So now on here we have the all new Inhumans number 2, and I might have made a mistake, because I actually wanted to do the uncanny Inhumans number 3. Yeah, exactly. I don't know how someone would have made that mistake.
Yeah.
But the Uncanny Inhumans number 3, this is Charles Soule, who is, you know, the keeper of the Inhumans, and Steve McNiven, who's doing nice work, by the way.
Yes.
It's a little loose for him, but I like it. And that might be the inker, actually, now that I'm looking at it. Jay Leiston. Doesn't matter. I didn't mean that, Jay. That was horrible.
Wow.
Sorry.
Does matter.
I said I like it, actually. It's, you know how Steve McNiven is always like his lines are very polished on the sides? Like, this brings it a much looser, more liney approach, and I actually really like it a lot. When I said it doesn't matter how I'm pronouncing it is what I actually meant, because I knew I was getting that wrong. Here's what's good about this. Kang.
Well, it's always good.
You may or may not remember, but Black Bolt made a deal with Kang to save his son. Mm-hmm. A while back. And so where we're at now is that Black Bolt and Medusa's son, Uhura, not of the USS Enterprise.
Sure. I was going to say. Yeah.
Can we be sure?
I mean, well, he's a grizzled bearded man, white man.
Then I think you've got it on there.
But, you know, he basically, I mean, the story is that he killed Kang, took over all of his time powers, and then, like, waited in one corner of time for his parents to find him, and now he's going to kill them and all the other Inhumans. And so basically they're fighting their son, who is, you know, the son of some very powerful people, plus all of Kang's power. He's in Kang's battle armor, and they're having a big fight, you know, it's a big battle.
Is there anything more disappointing than when Kang takes his mask off and just some kind of, like, douchey guy with a goatee underneath?
I don't ever want to see that.
And it's always a disappointment.
Always.
It's always a disappointment. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And
it's like Randall from Clerks is under there.
Yeah. I always.
did I just ruin Kang?
That got me.
No, what you did was you almost started talking about Clerks, and I was like, but I don't like Kevin Smith anymore, but I did like Clerks, and it's a whole thing in my head to deal with.
It's just disappointing, that's all. Go ahead. This was a very good issue. I liked it.
You read it? Yeah, no, like it's a big fight.
I'm reading both of these books, although I'm glad you switched books because I didn't really like the other Inhumans book.
Yeah, no, I didn't read the other one. I think I read the first issue and decided I was like, I'm just going to read this one that I really like. And we'll go with it. And you know, lots of Black Bolt action, lots of Kang action. There's a love triangle going on with Human Torch and Medusa. Lots of drama. You know, everything was good. It was a really fun issue.
When did they decide that the Fantastic Four are really Inhumans? That it wasn't a cosmic storm, it was a Terrigen Mist storm.
They haven't done that, right?
No, but when does that happen?
Oh, don't, God, Almighty.
There's got to be a line. And I think that's it.
Well, you know, the X-Men are pretty big pillars of the Marvel community, and they, you know.
And considering where the I don't know. I can't keep track of this stuff anymore. I was going to say, given the Fantastic Four, but maybe they're getting them back. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is.
So when I read the next book, one line came to my head. It was it's a very famous line. It's, this is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but a whimper. And that is what my feelings towards Ultimate End number 5 were. I guess the close out of the Ultimate Universe, the universe that revitalized Marvel 15 years ago. And
so this started before Secret Wars.
This started for Secret Wars. This is a Battle World book.
This started like 2 years ago, right?
This miniseries? I think so.
Yeah, this miniseries. I feel like this miniseries has been going on like since before I came back to the show.
Because really, like my instinct when I saw it, my comment was, oh, that?
Well, I've been looking for it because it hadn't ended yet, and this is supposed to, you know, this is the Ultimate Universe, and so I've been waiting for this one.
And did it deliver?
No.
Let me ask you this: did you read all those little panels that he used to do, like from Powers?
Yes, I did.
I didn't. I started to, and then I skipped around, and I was like, I don't care, because like it's very obvious what was going to happen here.
Yeah, right.
Like there was no surprise to it, so. Hence, there wasn't much reason to read it. You know what I mean? Like, as I was reading, I was like, this is, get to whatever your reveal is. Everybody's going to disappear. Oh, and now Miles is in the world. Oh, his mom's alive.
Everything's
okay. So Miles is the only one that remembers the Ultimate Universe, right? Is that what they're saying at the end there?
Yes.
Because he was surprised his mom was alive, so he remembers the Ultimate Universe. Okay. So this isn't actually the Marvel Universe, Miles, like we were teased at the end of Spider-Man. This is actually the Ultimate Universe, Miles, transported into the Marvel Universe.
How are we supposed to know that, by the way?
Know what?
How are we supposed to know that this is our world? When he's yes, good point. When he's swinging over the city at the end, where apparently Queens and Manhattan are just non-existent. Well, or Queens and Brooklyn, they're not there. Or New Jersey, depending on which way you're looking. But Manhattan's weird in this world. And this is the 616 world. Like,
I think this is looking south. I would be more concerned with how close the Empire State Building is to downtown.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot wrong. That's why I don't know. I don't know this Ultimate End. There's a whole lot wrong. That's the end of my review.
You have to, it's quote unquote our world because also who got the page rate for all the blank pages? I guess Bendis said he wrote it, right? Blank page. You have to know it's our world because Miles is showing up in the and it's teasing his new book, which takes place in the Marvel Universe. So, yeah.
But you'd have to know that.
Yeah. At this point, everyone knows that.
I was wondering if there was some clue in this wide shot that this was the 616 world, or I don't know if they're still calling
it. Well, it says, follow Miles Morales' adventures in the Marvel Universe in Spider-Man.
Oh. Okay.
So this is the end of the Marvel Universe, one of my favorite experiments in all of comics, produced one of my
Ultimate Universe.
Ultimate, not the Marvel Universe. This is the end of everything.
This is all over.
With good riddance.
Not good.
It was really just the series.
It was one of our favorite books of all time.
It was. It outstayed the welcome.
Yes. They didn't know what to do with it for the last couple of years.
Yes. Agreed.
And
yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
It ended with indignity. as I guess most things do.
So I guess I should check in because it's a Vertigo number one, and that's my job on this show.
Is it Vertigo?
I missed it. It must be.
Why? Because Constantine isn't.
All right, hold on. I'm going to the beginning. Anyways, Lucifer number one. I guess you could call this a Lucifer reboot. It's Vertigo. Dave Johnson cover. In advance of the television program that will be on, is it on Fox?
Yes.
Yes, it is on Fox. Yep.
Yeah, it will be on Fox for 2 to 4 weeks. And what you have here is the story of the first of the fallen.
Wait, hold on. People need to know. This is like one of your all-time favorite series, Lucifer.
Yeah, it's actually been so long that I haven't read it in a long time. I really loved it. Like when it was coming out.
Ron can attest. You would not shut up about Lucifer.
Yes, but I don't really remember too much of it.
It didn't really stick with you.
Yeah.
Well, it's been 10 years. I've read a lot of comics since then, and the children have ruined my mind. Yeah. But as I was going through it, things started to sort of pop up. But this is like a cleaner, easier, don't have to have read it before a reboot of that book. really nice art by Lee Garbett, who like Batgirl for a while, I think.
Yes,
really nice. And I think he likes Jaws a lot. So I
why do you think Lucifer got the Vertigo treatment but not on Constantine?
I don't know. Who
could tell, really?
I think that, well, John Constantine, I think they're like, well, let's pull him back into the DC universe and make stories out of him that work with everybody else, because they were going to do that whole line. And I don't know, maybe they're just doing this because they have a show and they have to do some, but they're
the show's over.
All right, well, whatever. I don't know. Writer's Holly Black. It wasn't bad. It felt like Lucifer. It felt a little like Remedial Lucifer. The other series has been written by Mike Carey, and we were talking about this earlier. You know, like it was very steeped in the lore and everything, whereas this was, almost more like a more basic version of these stories. But they did refer to the end of the last series, which was he left the throne of God with a little girl, which is Elaine, who is one of the main parts of that series. I think that's her name. That's the name that came into my head. And then at the end, we see the Lord of Hell was Mazikeen, who was one of the big characters. She was the one with half her face melted off, and she was sort of like a gross, disgusting half skull thing. But she turned into a pretty lady who also still has half a face. So basically, like, Lucifer just shows up again, and he's injured, and he's low on power, but he starts a new club in Los Angeles, which I think is the thing in the show. But it has the right tone. It has the right feel. It looks really good. I think the art works really, really well. I enjoyed that part.
Were you surprised?
About what?
That it was enjoyable? That you didn't hate it?
No, not really, because they didn't try to... It's not DC. It is at Vertigo. So it was just somebody else's take on it, so it feels a little different. And, it's a first issue, so it has to set things up and be approachable. But it was kind of nice. It was just saying, like, I hadn't thought about it in a while. I don't remember a lot of the details, but they come back to me as I'm going through it. And I like this character. He's sort of a fun, droll kind of, he's not really going to worry about anything, even though everything's going really wrong kind of character. And he's Satan, which there is sort of an edge to that I really like, that they're going to do that character, and make him likable, I guess, more or less. You're going to root for the devil in this series, which is, there's something sort of subversive about that I really enjoy. And they get Gabriel, who's like a homeless drunk, no longer an angel, to try to fight him. And, then they start to talk instead. A lot of machinations are being set up, and it was fine. It was good to go back in there. Part of me was about to say I wish Mike Carey was writing it again, but actually,
but
that's
he
not
did
true.
It. He did.
Yeah,
it.
No, that's why, yeah. I stopped saying it, because he did his story. He did the whole thing, the 60 issues, and you, like, that all exists and is fine. And I'd actually really like to read that again. I've gone back through Preacher enough times that I think I could do. I think I tried once or twice. It's pretty dense, so it was actually really good to read monthly, as opposed to just like plowing through a bunch of them. But
do you think they kept it in Vertigo because of the relationship with Sandman?
I don't know.
Because it's a spinoff from Sandman, basically.
You asked me that question, and I started thinking to myself, I'm in no way qualified to answer this question.
Well, no, I know, but I mean, we're speculating as to why it's, you know, it didn't get, you know, why they pulled Constantine over to the DCU, but they, you know, this is thing, because I think that this is related to Sandman in that cold, you know, Neil Gaiman kind of world, and that's probably why it's, I don't know.
I think it's a little more like they're trying to reestablish Vertigo.
Yeah.
So you've got a premier property that's on television now, and they probably were like, can we keep this with us now?
And also, this is a very Vertigo type character and story type thing. Yeah, yeah. So
it doesn't fit in DC. Whereas Constantine had previously established ties, you know, in those.
Yeah, Constantine originally was in the DCU and then got moved into Vertigo, right?
Yes.
He showed up in.
He was Swamp Thing was his first appearance.
Yeah. Swamp Thing, there you go. And then he showed up like with the Justice League in Sandman, I believe.
Right at the funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was on that sketchy line of things that moved over to Vertigo once there was a Vertigo, but he was in DC first. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you're back on the wagon.
Woo!
The Lucifer wagon. Cool. So take a quick break to thank everybody who has helped iFanboy this year. We had a great year, and we've done it all because of you, the audience. And if you would like to help continue to support iFanboy into 2016, there's a bunch of different ways you guys can do that. You can go to ifanboy.com/support, and there you can find a link to Amazon where you can do all of your shopping. And I know it's probably too late now, but if you still got to do some last-minute Christmas shopping,
it's not too late. No, tell them some two-day shipping, overnight shipping, you're good.
Yeah, $4.
It can happen. So all you got to do is go to ifanboy.com/support, and at the bottom of the page is a big old banner to go click on it to go over to Amazon. And any purchase you make over there helps us out. We get a little taste of it, not from you, but from Amazon themselves. So it's really a simple and easy way for you to help out iFanboy in the process. If you'd like to help us out in a more direct manner, you can sign up for a iFanboy membership, where you can sign up for $3 a month or $30 a year. And we thank all of our loyal members who have done that and continue to pay our server bills. And we appreciate that. And if you'd like to give us a little year-end bonus, you can give a one-time donation. There's a link via PayPal and a bunch more other. Actually, it's every week there's a couple more people who do it, and we thank everybody who's done that. It's really nice for you to kick a couple of dollars our way to help us keep giving you the quality comic book entertainment that you deserve on a weekly basis. So we thank
January too. Get your family gifts first, but then in January we're coming for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, I don't want to phrase it that way.
Wrong show, Josh.
Sorry.
So go to ifanboy.com support. We thank everybody for their continued support.
Ron, you just got to believe.
Got to believe. That's all.
So sex number 26, I believe, is Joe Casey doing his best Grant Morrison with the two-page hallucinogenic dying, I don't want to say fantasies, but visions that the old man has. He's finally dead after 26 issues. These are just
some
crazy. I don't know what they mean. There's some tentacles made of people, and there's a baby being born with a umbilical cord made of people, and there's some more people. And I love this book. I know you guys are sort of down on it, but I love it.
When did I say that? Why do you think
last
that?
Time we talked about it, you said you felt like it was going nowhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
Harsh.
I might have just been in a bad mood. I fell a couple issues behind, so I read this one and the last one in sort of one go this time. And I actually wondered to myself what it was you were going to bring up about it, but I guess that is fairly significant.
Well, we know he and Grant still buddies. They were buddies at one point.
They used to talk. I know they used to talk very frequently and discuss stuff together. So it's – I guess I didn't even think of that as unusual as coming from Joe, because it does feel like it's an element that's shown. His comics have been wacky, man. Like, this
they
is
are, yeah.
among the least wacky of the comics, so maybe it didn't really stand out. I liked this.
Yep.
I liked the sort of story that's going on and the transition of you know, this guy's dead, so here, you know, what happens next? And I really like watching whatever's happening to this, like, middle management guy or whoever.
something real bad's going to happen to him.
Yeah, like, they're really drawing it out because he's just...
You think it's going to be this? Nope, not this time, but... Something bad's going to happen to him.
I really want that to be the thing. And I want to know the Robin character's story. And
it's interesting that the tidbit this month was that he's actually much better at it than the Batman character.
Yeah.
And he should have been the one who was the sort of the saint. Maybe they're sent there. Maybe that's the arc for him, is that he should be the one protecting the city. So it'll be interesting.
Yep, it's good. If I said that before, I'm sorry, Joe and Peter. I'm sorry.
Very subtle. So Huck number two picks up the second issue of Mark Miller and Raphael Albuquerque's collaboration. And as we talked about a little earlier, the idea of somebody with, you know, great powers and abilities in a small town getting outed. And I love this series. I love it.
I'll tell you the moment I was reading it, and I was like, okay, I'm trying to remember what the last one was. And the moment that this issue won me over was you've got all these people start coming after him and asking questions. And I was like, oh, he's going to freak out. He's whatever. Yep. He goes, hold on, let me just write this down. And yep. He writes down the tersest note ever, and he's like, all right, I got this.
Yep.
And then he goes and he takes care of everything.
Yeah,
like, so without an issue.
The media gets alerted to the fact that he exists, and all these people show up at his house, and one woman, her husband's been missing for years, and she's trying to find him, their daughter's missing, like all these people. And yeah, and then just the moment where he's like, well, hang on, let me write this down. And it's endearing and warm, and it just feels great. And when the issue ended, I actually got mad because I thought it was too short. Mm-hmm. I wanted more.
Of course this guy's Russian. Huck.
What makes you say that?
His mom was from Siberia, about to give birth to him.
No, I know why of course he's Russian, though.
Just because. Strong like bull.
It's like that guy from Seven Eves.
Yeah.
I just love this, and that's, I think, the sign of a good comic is when it ends, I was sad. I wanted to never stop. So
before you get too far into your analysis, Ron, I really enjoyed Phonogram, or Photogram, as it says here in the script, the Immaterial Girl number 5.
Why did you enjoy it?
I thought it was the most easily followable.
This is my favorite issue of the series as well.
Yes, exactly. Yep. I was able to follow the story. I knew what was going on.
I knew exactly sort of where Cole was at.
Yep.
Emotionally, what he was going through.
Kieran Gillen.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
No, I really liked that. I mean, if I had any nitpick, Times Square.
It works for the visual.
I know. Times Square? Really? Where is everyone?
Well, that was my one thing. That was where I kind of went, oh, Jamie. It's because now, Connor, you and I,
circus.
But the thing was, if you read the issue, the character said the I forget the guy's name. But he's like, I drive around and all this sort of stuff. I've never left, and I've always wanted to go to New York. I've never been to New York. I'm never going to go. That's why I sent him to Times Square.
It's the most New York thing you could do to him.
Right. But the thing is that there needs to be a lot more people in that scene.
Maybe it's 4 in the morning.
4 in the morning, and he's going to do the New York experience with a hot dog. I thought this was the most straightforward issue of the series so far. And like you said, it was very, very clear as to what the motivations and what the point in the story is. This is really kind of the denouement for these characters. And the next issue, thank you. The next issue is the last issue. So I'm getting, kind of curious to see how it wraps up and how it all goes. But this was a nice, as someone who's been reading the character of David Cole / Kieran Gillen throughout all these series, this was a nice moment for the character of maturity and reaching the end point of the character's arc. So very well done. This continues to be fantastic. So. But then also from Team Gillen McKelvey came The Wicked and the Vine number 17, which was the last issue of the story of the arc that featured guest artists. And this featured an entire issue drawn by Brandon Graham, which is, anybody who's a Brandon Graham fan knows that sometimes that takes a long time to wait for. And I'm surprised that it came out on time and on schedule. So good job, Brandon. But it was really interesting to see somebody with such a different style than Jamie McKelvey draw those characters, like the Tron-like character. Brandon just takes a completely different take on it. But it was a blast, and it just continues to see how I think no matter how out there or esoteric the story of Wicked and Divine is. I think that this arc proved that what Kieran and Jamie have created, they can bring in other artists into the fold very easily and tell just as compelling stories and move the story along, and kind of helps prove the Wicked and Divine staying power. So great job on that. It was a fantastic arc, and I'm excited now that Jamie's coming back to the book full time, as well as colors Matt Wilson. I'm excited to see where they go from here. So.
So we discussed the newest Invincible reboot, or as the cover says, reboot. Where we find that Mark has been transported back in time to the beginning of his story, but knowing everything that happens afterwards. And this is the third part and the last part of that little arc. And Mark is approached by some sort of sentient alien being, and they tell him, we knew you would be right for this and that you would fix things. And all you have to do is tell us that you'll stay here. And the only thing it means is that you'll be stuck in this timeline. And he's like, I can't leave my daughter. And they said, well, you know, I know I could probably marry Eve again. We'd have another daughter, but it wouldn't be her. So screw this. I'm going back. And he does. And everything has changed.
Well, yeah.
Alternate 1985.
Biff is the president.
And that's where we're going forward from here.
So now he's screwed. He should have stayed in. He should have stayed in the back and back.
Well, So you know what really works for superheroes? Lots of guilt. That's what if you know anything about the Spider-Man story,
yep.
Guilt is where it's at. So that's which has always been, you know, like that's the closest thing is like he always reminds us of Spider-Man. He's trying to do too much.
Mark does not make the best decisions.
And that's isn't that great?
Yeah, no, it's great. It makes for great stories. It's just he makes.
Yeah, but he's also like there was no right decision to make there. Yeah. So. Anyway, it's not really that happened as much as this is the start of the next epoch of this book, which, you know, I mean, they're clearly doing what they can to make themselves stay interested in it. If you think about it, and they're taking off until April because Ryan Ottley needs to recharge his batteries as spend time with the family, as it were. If you think about how long Ryan Ottley has been drawing this book at the level that he draws it. Without missing an issue, without being late, he can take a lot longer off than
that. Well, you used to get regular breaks when Corey Walker would draw an issue.
But every once in a while, for the most part, he's been drawing.
But he used to have those breaks built in, and now that hasn't happened in a long time. So there you go.
So it'll be back.
And those are the books we're going to talk about to close out the year. You can go to ifanboy.com and find the post for this show and talk about these books or other books that came out this week. Good week of books. I enjoyed my week.
Yeah.
Or maybe solid. I just needed some distraction. Either way, it was a good week. I enjoyed my comics this week.
Right on.
Let's close up the year. I thought, you know, since we're not doing a Star Wars book, which really threw me off.
That's week, weird.
The only one that came out was the Vader annual, which was I read that. It was all right.
So yeah. I thought we would do an email.
It wasn't Vader down.
It wasn't Vader down. Vader down.
Let's do an audience email to make up for it. Why don't you read it, Ron?
All right, so our email comes from Johnny M., who says, I'm 22 years old, and I just finished watching the original Star Wars trilogy for the first time last night, having watched the prequels a long time ago. I saw nothing wrong with them and thought you guys were just nitpicking the movies. After finishing the original trilogy, I can say with extreme certainty that you guys were right. Tell your sister you were right.
You'd watch them more, by the way.
I can say with extreme certainty that you guys were right, and the prequels do not exist to me anymore. As this is my first time experiencing Star Wars and nothing past my knowledge of the only first three films made, I would like to expand this knowledge by reading more about the amazing universe, canon or non-canon, comic or non-comic. With that being said, I have two questions for you. How can someone go 22 years without watching these amazing films? And what do you guys recommend I read? Well, the first question, I feel like you're more in a better position, Johnny, than us to answer. So, because considering that we grew up with these movies,
Look in the mirror.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about that today and that, like, we didn't have like articles explaining things to us or anything. Like, no. We just see them and think that's weird and then talk about it for 15 years.
Right.
20.
That's what it was. I mean, like, that's what it was, which I think is much more compelling. Whereas now you can see a thing that's interesting and you can just look it up. Well, and if there's not the answer, there's an answer, and that's enough.
I was talking with our buddy Mike Romo about this, how he used to watch some really crappy entertainment show every day because it featured a 5-second clip of the trench run. As a kid, because that was the only way you could watch it. It wasn't like
I heard that from others.
It wasn't like he had, a DVD of the movie or it was on all the time. It was just, you know, you never saw it. Once you saw something in the theater, it was gone. That was it.
Or if you were lucky enough to have a VCR and when they showed it on CBS in 1982 and your dad taped it for you and then halfway through the movie it breaks to with Dan Rather with an update about the Iran-Iraq war, you still watched it though, you know, like because which is fascinating because like these movies, like the original trilogy, when you think about it, I remember them being shown not on HBO or on cable but on broadcast TV with no editing.
But also
they're all ages, they're perfect.
But also not very often. There was a long period of time where they weren't on TV at all.
Yep, so I just realized that broadcast TV used to put on real movies every once in a while.
Yeah, no, they all the time That's they gone. Would do that. Yeah, totally.
That's interesting.
So
the answer is because it's a different world, and we don't blame you for living in a different world and being a younger person. It's okay.
Well, don't speak for all of us.
Well, no, we hate you for being younger. That's different. Yeah. But not for the choices that were made. Anyway, thanks for glad to have you aboard. Basically,
okay. So now that you want more, now that you want more of a taste, I think the first place you got to go is the Timothy Zahn trilogy.
Well, wait a second. Yeah. I thought of that too. But if the new films are all about the future,
right?
Then it's going to be weird that the books are telling the same story but are completely
different. That's going to be everything, though.
Yeah.
Yes and so, no. There are things you can read, like the Timothy Zahn smuggler book that takes place in the past.
Yeah. Well, you could read.
They're not all. Not all the books take place in the future.
All the things that I would say, like this was fun and that I read, it's all gonna. It doesn't matter. It's all quote unquote legends now. It's not.
It's all gone.
So
yeah. Yeah.
It's all just fun, well done fan fiction, basically, that was published by actual publishers. So I would kind of agree. I was gonna say Dark Empire, but Shadows of the Empire. And
The Dark Empire is great. If you can still find it, you can find. I don't know. It's not in print anymore, but it was published by Dark Horse, but that was with Cam Kennedy art. Dark Empire was a blast, and the Timothy Zahn trilogy. That was a comic book, and the Timothy Zahn trilogy is a prose book called the Thrawn trilogy about Grand Admiral Thrawn. It takes place after Jedi. It's not canon anymore because they're throwing everything out the door. So like we can't. You know, as far as canon goes, it's go read the stuff Marvel's putting out now and go read the novels that came out now and then watch the new movie. That's it.
But we can't vouch for that stuff in the same way. So exactly. Like, if you want to go back and see the stuff that was just because it was and it was fun. I mean, I don't watch the cartoons, but people seem to really like them.
Yeah, Rebels is apparently very good.
Rebels, yeah, people really like Rebels. Wars. I mean, people I respect.
Yeah.
So there's that stuff, but I mean, those Thrawn books are a hell of a lot of fun, even if it's not the story.
Yeah.
Like, they're still... Or the Tales of stories were always my favorites. The Tales of the Bounty Hunters, Tales of the Cantina.
Oh, Tales of Jabba's Palace. Yeah,
yes.
Jabba's Palace.
Yeah. Those were anthology stories. Those were fun. And those actually take place sort of to the side of the original trilogy. So you can totally read those.
I think, you're not going to get Tales from Jabba's Palace ruined for you very much. You're going to know all about Malakili, and it's going to be worth it.
Yeah, totally worth it. and if you want something more recent, if you can find it, some of the in the last year in the death throes of Dark Horse, one of our favorite teams, Gabriel Hardman and Karina Becko did a great run on some Star Wars stuff that took place way in the future, like way in the future. That is just so out there that it's just not tied to anything. And I think they stand on their own as just good kind of Star Wars universe stories. So check those out. So
Star Wars Legacy. Was that what the title of it was?
I'm sorry?
Was it Star Wars Legacy? Was that the title?
It was Star Wars Legacy, I think that's what it was. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so. Cool. Well, Johnny, welcome to the fold. We're glad that you are on the right side of the fence now. And enjoy the rest of your future Star Wars life. We wish you a lot
of fun. Knights of the Old Republic was a fun game.
Yeah.
If you want to go back and find a thing that way.
Dark Forces.
Yeah.
I love Dark Forces.
Lots of good stuff out there. Oh, also, Chris. I want you to take, 2.5 hours or so, just sit down and trust me, just sit all the way through the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh. I was waiting in line for the new movie and someone said, "What is it? Does Chewbacca have a family?" And I was able to explain his entire family and tell a lot of, because I watched the Holiday Special. So
yeah.
Lumpy. Itchy. Mala.
That went very differently than when we were in line for the Phantom Menace run.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't there for the Phantom Menace line, but.
You weren't there?
No. Yeah, I was by myself. You guys did that without me.
That's right.
Yeah, it was Connor. It was you and I in episode 2 and 3 lines. That's where we were.
It was me and Josh for the Phantom Menace.
It was before the dark times, before the iFanboy.
So if you have an email for us in 2016, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. Tell us where you are. Tell us who you are and where you're from. Who you're from. Oh, Jesus. Is this year over yet? So this is the last show of the year, as we've mentioned, and in the last couple of shows, we've done sort of a wrap-up segment. We talked about our favorite creators, we talked about our favorite books, and so we're ending the year, as we always do, with the Picks of the Week by the Numbers segment, which we used to do on the website back when we did the website, and now we've been doing it on the show for the last couple of years. This is where we take a look at all the Picks of the Week of the year, do some number crunching, and see where it all nets out. It's a little fun little game we like to play.
This is your favorite time of year, Connor, isn't it?
It wasn't when I did this. I cannot vouch for any of these numbers.
Okay.
I was on a lot of medication when I did this. I don't know if it all matches. So this year, there were 50 picks of the week, 20 by Josh, 19 by myself, 9 by Ron, and 2 by Paul.
Okay.
So we had a nice spread there between Josh and I, at least. Would you like to guess the most popular company? Who had the most picks of the week?
I guess Image.
Josh?
Image?
So indeed, the number one company was Image with 19 picks of the week. And what was interesting to me was that this year we had Battleworld, and this year we had that fucking DC one whose name I can't even remember anymore.
Convergence.
Yep. And during that time, we didn't... We hardly read any DC books, didn't pick any. We hardly read any Marvel books during Battleworld, didn't pick any. But Marvel still came in at number 2 with 14 picks, and DC with 13.
Well, weren't 1872, wasn't that a Battleworld book?
Right.
Yep, it was. Yep.
Or like Secret Wars and stuff? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't like a total loss.
Well,
but...
people complained, the people who are fans of one over another complained that we talked about Image too much. But really, at the end of the day, 19, 14, 13 isn't that big of a spread.
Yeah.
Archie had one, Black Mask Studios had one, Boom Studios had one, and Dark Horse Comics each had one.
All right.
Now by
was the Boom book?
The Boom book was this week's Klaus.
Oh.
By the spread by person, Josh, you had 4 different companies as your pick. 10 by Image, 5 by DC, 4 by Marvel, 1 by Dark Horse. Of that DC, only one was Vertigo. I had 5 companies. DC had 6, Image had 6, Marvel had 5, Archie had 1, Boom had 1, and of that, 2 of them were Vertigo. Ron, you only had 4 companies, 4 by Marvel, 3 by Image, 1 by Black Mask, 1 by DC.
All right.
Of that, 1 was Vertigo. And Paul had 1 from Marvel and DC each. Vertigo books are almost all Astro City. And then by writer, so this is where we start figuring out who our favorite creators were by the numbers. We actually had a really big writer spread this year. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 writers with more than 2 picks this year.
Wow.
Anyone want to guess who the number one writer was, who had the most picks?
Jason Aaron
with 5. The top, everybody who had more than 2 picks accounted for 38% of all of the picks this year. So Jason Aaron had 5. James Robinson had 4, Scott Snyder had 4, Ed Brubaker had 3, and Kurt Busiek had 3. And then that's followed by Brian Wood, Garth Ennis, Jerry Duggan, Grant Morrison, Mark Miller, Rick Remender, each had two books.
All right.
A much smaller spread by writers, by artists. In fact, 39 of the picks were by different artists. The only artists who were picked multiple times, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them. Anybody want to guess which artist had the most picks?
Frank Quitely.
Frank Quitely was not on the list anywhere.
Oh,
why not?
Darwin Cook.
Nope. Josh?
I'm having a hard time with this. What would have been Greg Hinkle?
McKelvey.
Greg Hinkle.
Oh, Greg Hinkle.
Greg Hinkle got 4. He was the most picked artist.
Wow. Look at that. Rookie year.
Followed by Sean Phillips with 3. Greg Capullo, Jason Latour, Jesus Marino, and Sean Gordon Murphy each had 2.
Wow.
And every other book was in a different artist. 30% by these top artists are all the picks. So it was a widespread with the artists this year.
Wow.
I don't know what that means, but that's what it was. So we like to pick number one issues a lot. We had 15 of them this year, up from 12 last year.
That's embarrassing.
Although...
A lot of number ones came out.
A lot of Image number ones this year. And
a lot of everybody had number ones this year.
That's true. Everybody rebooted. By publisher, 7 of them were from Image, 6 are from Marvel, 2 are from DC. And the person who loves number ones the most, which of us loves them the most?
This guy.
Josh Flanagan with 7. He had almost half of all the number one picks.
I get bored.
I had 5, Ron had 2, Paul had 1. And actually, only 2 of these number ones were specials that they put number one on, even though they're not never going to continue. Which is actually a really low number for us. So we actually had 13 true number ones picked. Star Wars, Big Man Plans, Invisible Republic, Secret Wars, Where Monsters Dwell, Airboy, Starve, 1872, Tokyo Ghost, Doctor Strange, The Twilight Children, The Vision, and Jupiter's Circle Volume 2. And the 2 specials were Criminal Special Edition and the Multiversity Ultra Comics. Those were the number ones.
I feel like a new Starve hasn't been out in a while.
Anyway. Possibly. And now the moment. This is where we decide what the book of the year was by the pick. We had 5 books picked more than once this year. Only 5.
Okay.
Anybody want to try to guess all 5?
Airboy, Astro City, I'm out.
Southern Bastards.
Those are 3 of the 5.
The Batman.
Batman and The Fade Out. You guessed all 5.
Wow, look at us.
And who would like to guess the number one book?
Airboy.
Airboy had 4, followed by Astro City with 3, Batman with 3, Southern Bastards with 2, and The Fade Out with 2.
Well, I mean, the thing that about Airboy is that's 100%.
Right.
It did 4 issues, 4 consecutive issues. All of them got, that's never happened.
Well, not only was it picked the most, not only was it the artist with the most, but it was a 100% pick rating. So it has to be, by default, the book of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Agreed.
So those are the picks by the numbers.
By the numbers and by the con. Like, we would have all said that by whatever weird content we used to judge.
Right.
We're all on board with that.
So there you go.
Cool. Another year in the books. Our 10th year. Well, kind of, sort of.
Yes, it's our 10th year. Yeah, we started in 05, and this is the end of
15. Yeah, well, we started in October 05, so.
And it's beyond October 15th. So
all right, fair enough. So, cool. All right, well, that said, we can't stop podcasting, even though it's killing us.
How.
Even though it's killing us.
It's quite literally killing us.
So if you haven't listened to our special edition podcast about Jessica Jones, the Netflix TV show, you need to put down this podcast and go listen to it. Purely,
I have to. I'm way behind.
Jessica.
Josh doesn't listen unless he's on it.
Yeah. No, I love listening when I'm not on it, but I'm way behind just in podcasts in general. This was a bad time for Star Wars Minute to come back. That's all I know.
It really was. Well, I agree. Yeah, but it's been enjoyable. But anyway, so go back and listen to our Jessica Jones podcast where me, Connor, and our good friend Mike Romo talk about the Netflix TV series for about an hour and the magic of David Tennant. So go do that. Jessica.
You can also – we've alluded to this several times in this episode, and I think we're going to keep doing that until the show's over. Someday. Goodfellas Minute is our other podcast that we do where we analyze the movie, Martin Scorsese movie Goodfellas, 1 minute at a time, 5 days a week. And it's good. I would say it's a good show. We have fun doing it. It's a different show than this. And I'm still not sick of Goodfellas. Not even close.
Yeah, not at all. Yep.
Get that at goodfellasminute.com. You can listen to it every weekday.
This is the last show of the year, but not the last podcast of the year. Still got a couple more for you. If you're listening to this show the day it comes out, then you can expect the podcast about Star Wars The Force Awakens within about 24 hours, 36 hours. We're going to try.
Ish.
We're trying to get it out as soon as humanly possible. It'll probably be Monday the 21st, but late in the evening. As soon as it's done, we're going to slap the music on it and put it out for you. So look for the Star Wars The Force Awakens very, very soon. And then 1 week later, all the year-end all-media show, which we love to do, 3 hours of discussion about all our favorite stuff from media this year that comes out on December 27th in the usual time slot that the Pick of the Week does. And then the Pick of the Week show returns January 10th, hopefully slightly more healthy.
Well, yeah. If we're not healthier by then, then...
I'm not going to be healthy by then, but I hope to be healthier by then, yes.
So, well, hopefully we can make it, Connor. I'm pulling for you.
In the meantime, head over to iFanboy.com to comment on this show and find all the other podcasts we just mentioned. Jessica Jones, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, the Year in All Media show. All those can be found on iFanboy.com. You can't find Goodfellas Minute there, but that's what GoodfellasMinute.com is for. Talk about this week's books, talk about the movies you've seen, talk about anything you want over at iFanboy.com. You can follow us at Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. That's how you can find out what the book pick of the week is before the show comes out. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Ron XO.
Yes. And if you like the show, please do us a favor and tell a friend. Go down to your comic book store and tell everybody, you know, if you're one of the type who go on Wednesday and chat about this week's books, be like, you know, hey, if you like this conversation, you should go listen to iFanboy. They do it every week. Also, you can go to iTunes and write a review for this show, for Goodfellas Minute, for Star Wars Minute, for any – I don't know any other comics podcasts anymore that are left.
11 o'clock comics.
If 11 o'clock comics. Yeah, if you like a good comic book podcast or any podcast, go write a review on iTunes. It helps to spread the word and for those shows to grow audiences. And we thank everybody who's done it. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's show, and it's also going to wrap it up for 2015 in terms of comics. And
just before we go, and this is really important, Johnny M, do not watch the Star Wars Holiday Special.
No, watch the. I think you should watch the Holiday Special, Johnny. I think don't listen to Josh. You should.
It's a horrible.
It's fantastic.
It's famously horrible. It's famously horrible.
It's horrible. He's 22.
Yeah.
He's not going to get the irony here, Josh.
If you're into drugs, maybe give it a shot. But otherwise, stay away.
Yeah. All right. So with that word of advice, until 2016, I'm Ron.
I am Connor for now.
That's ominous.
I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not feeling well.
I can't guarantee it.
I can't guarantee I'll be Connor tomorrow.
My fanboy got dark at the end of the year. Yeah, and all the shows after that were pre-recorded. So if they're not dead... Merry Christmas.
I could have been someone.
Well, so could anyone.
You took my dreams from me.
When I first found you,
I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own.
Can't make it all alone. I built my dreams around you.
And the boys of the NYPD choir were singing Galway Bay. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.